idea of what is the goal of life and how to realize it, how to practically experience it. The whole science we saw very beautifully getting unfolded. And Arjuna was told that this one truth can be realized by various different paths. And these paths are all required for different constitutions. The path for A is not necessarily the path for B. These different paths are not matters of choice as such. It is not like going to a restaurant and just asking for food of my choice. You know, you look at the menu card and then say, I like steaks, or I like, say, pizza, or I like... And this is not the matter of choice. There at restaurant, whatever you like, provided you are ready to pay for it, it is all matter of choice there. Whatever is available, whatever you like, whatever you feel is good for you, you can choose. You have the choice there. But it is more like, you know, you have a physical problem, some sickness, you go to the doctor and then you just can't say that, oh, I like that medicine. It is depending on what illness you have, what actually is going to cure your illness. And although the health is more or less the same condition, the sickness that each of us is suffering is not necessarily the same. So, the health condition for everybody would be same, that yes, I have no health problem, I am feeling strong and enthusiastic, energetic. That is common for all health condition. But healthy condition is same, but sickness, the sicknesses may be different for different people. Somebody may be suffering from some stomach ailment, somebody may be having some lung problem, somebody may be having heart problem, somebody's brain might not be functioning properly. Somebody's, well, there are so many varieties in ailments. So, therefore, although the truth is same, the digression from the truth that we have come to has an immense variety. And therefore, the path that one should take is a very characteristic path according to one's constitution. It is not just a matter of choice. No, I like this and I like that. You don't do in case of medication, should not do. Some people still do like that. They go to the doctor and then they give a long advice to doctor. They pay the doctor to give a lecture to the doctor, you know, that what I should do and what I should not do. So, that is not the right thing to do. You go to an expert and the expert gives you the diagnosis. It is not the matter of your liking anymore, you see. What actually is going to cure you, that is what decides what you should be doing. So, in this case also, there are various paths, and the path that is constitutionally right for one need not be always the one that is liked by that person. In fact, it is usually the case that somebody else's path appears to be very charming and very inviting. And we get tempted by that. When our work is to be converted into worship, our work, that was the essence of the teachings till now, we saw that whatever work we are doing, that has to be done with the spirit of dedication and without any attachment into the work. We have to do the work with utmost sincerity, but yet without entanglement, without attachment, and with the spirit of dedication to the Lord. That was the message given to Arjuna. Now, when our work is to be done with this spirit, we feel that, oh, my work isn't good enough to make it a spiritual practice. Look, that person's work is so nice. I am working in the bank, and that man is a professor at that school. See how nice that fellow's work is. Let me change my work. Well, you may change your work for some other reason, that is a different matter. But spiritually, it is not that by changing your work, you get to enlightenment. Do your work, whatever work that has come to you, because of your expertise, because of the social requirement around you, and because of what you are presented with, you are doing that work. Now don't concentrate on changing the work, but concentrate on changing the attitude with which the work is being done. Now, when this was told to Arjuna, he had a question that, well, what pulls me away from this? We have this problem that we decide to lead a spiritual life, a life in pursuit of all the great virtues. We agree that we should mold our life in that direction, but in spite of our best desires, it appears that somebody, something pulls us away from this path, makes us do things that we don't want to do. We commit, this is what is called sin here. Sin does not necessarily mean here that one should go and murder somebody, or one should do something, some illegal act. That is not the only the scope of sin here. The sin is whatever action you commit that is against your moral judgment. Something that you don't want to do being on this right spiritual path, and yet you are pushed into that. So Arjuna, as a representative of all of us, asked this question, that what is that makes us commit those actions? Although I don't want it, somebody forces me to do it. I am like those who hijack a person. Then that person or that vehicle is taken to where that person didn't want to take it. That person is taken against his wish to some other place. So we are pulled like that to some other place. So what is that? And the great psychologist Lord Krishna gives the answer. And the answer is continuing. As we saw, Lord is not giving answer just to the words of the question, but to the psychological disposition of Arjuna, which has given rise to this question. The question is not merely an academic question. It is an urge of Arjuna to actually be able to tread on the right path. That is manifesting in the form of this question. And therefore, the question is being answered in that manner, that these actions are propelled by desire. We have, as we see, when we understand ourselves to be separate from the world, this is not truth, you know. that this separation is not real, I and the world, and therefore this separation then brings the reaction of dissatisfaction, which manifests as desire. Desire means dissatisfaction. If I am satisfied, I will have no desire. Dissatisfaction alone brings desire. If I am perfectly satisfied, I will not have any desire whatsoever. Desire means something that I don't have and I seek. That is the meaning of desire. I am not going to seek a nose. I already have one, you know. Two noses don't look beautiful, so I am quite satisfied with one. So, I won't desire for a nose. I have it. So, if you have something, you don't desire for it. What is the meaning of desire? The feeling of deep dissatisfaction. And some idea that if I get that something, I will get satisfied. So, the desire comes out because of this experience of separation, I and the world. And somehow, you want to get connected to the world to again regain that oneness. That regaining that oneness. And desire makes you feel, you know, that I want to get that, means that and you become one, you know. I want to get that. And getting that thus brings you a sense of temporary satisfaction. Like you feel I must eat ice cream, then that desire is there, I and ice cream. And as long as that separation is there, you don't feel happy. As when you and ice cream then become one, you feel happy, you say, I got my ice cream. So, that oneness brings the sense of satisfaction and happiness. But it is very temporary because your need was not just ice cream. The fundamental problem still remains there, that separation of I and world still remains. And so a new desire rises that yes, I had my ice cream, but now I need something else. I need to go to a movie. So that desire then makes you go there. You feel you come back and then, well, are you still satisfied? No, another desire comes there. So it is, let me become that movie star. I saw, you know, let me become that. And then that desire continues to propel one's life. So that is how the desire makes us restless continuously. And that desire makes us do so many wrong things. This desire has a counterpart. And that counterpart is anger. Desire and anger are not really separate. They are together, one that as we say, two in one. Anger is an automatic counterpart of desire. Whenever desire meets obstruction, it becomes anger. We have seen this in details. Now, further thing, he tells that desire, you may say, I will satisfy, then there will be no anger. Desires, as we just saw, are insatiable. Only one desire can be satisfied. Let us have that desire to realize that oneness, to experience that oneness. That is the only true desire that can be satisfied. So if we work for that, we are going in right direction. If we want to run for tidbits, then we are not going in right direction at all. Then that desire will never be able to fulfilled, and that will get converted into anger. Thus, we become angry. We get frustrated. We get resentful. Anger doesn't always mean that we will go and hit somebody, not necessarily. In mind also we can hit many people. In modern society we have learned to put on the mask of smile, you know, to hide the anger. We have learned those tricks. The resentment inside is covered by a socially acceptable smile. You just smile at people, say, very nice, but inside you are seething with anger. Expressing the anger, in a way that is better. At least it gets a vent and that tension goes down. But if you do not let that anger go out like that, cover it with a heap of smiles, then what happens is that anger goes deeper, becomes hatred. That anger then, like a disease, you somehow suppress it with steroids, then not that the disease goes away, it remains there. It is like putting some ash on the fire, so you don't immediately see it. But it is still, that seething anger is there, it goes deeper, becomes a deep-rooted hatred. So, and that hatred may make you commit so many different types of crimes. And the Hitler's actions, you know, what they were born of, deep-rooted hatred, you know, that yes, these Jews are not good people, so let them, that it was not expressed immediately, but the deep-rooted hatred, it is not rational, it just then manifests, you know, in various irrational actions, that it is any crime then can be committed. Mahapapma, Lord therefore says that this fellow becomes then the biggest criminal. Doesn't stop short of committing any kind of crime. Anything becomes justifiable. So, in fact, the need to justify also vanishes. It is why? Because of this unbridled desires, they go on becoming bigger and bigger. The anger becomes bigger and bigger. That gets converted into hatred. So, a big this thing, hunger, this has, our desires are constantly craving, constantly asking, and constant anger. So, this is how this enemy of ours is, Viddhi Enam Iha Vairinam. He says that know this to be your enemy. Because we don't consider desire to be an enemy. Why it has to be told? Because normally we don't consider desire to be enemy. We think that the desire is nice friend of ours. Desire brings us so many pleasures. So, we try to, you know, keep the desire. Rather, in our modern society, in consumeric society, what is that it survives on multiplication of desires. Not only the desires we try to remove them, but add more desires. All advertisements and all, and increase, create new desires. That is the society, and that is how we feel that our life will be satisfied. Desire is considered a friend, a harbinger of progress. That is how desire is sometimes described. That if we feel the desire, then only we will make progress. So, the idea that the desire is an enemy doesn't dawn on us. So Lord says, treat that as your enemy. And next verse says, the 39th verse of third chapter, Avritam jnanametena ज्ञानिनो नित्यवैरिणा कामरूपेण कौन्तेय दुष्पूरेणानलेन च। ओ सन ऑफ कुंती, नॉलेज इज कवर्ड बाय दिस इटर्नल एनिमी ऑफ द वाइज इन द फॉर्म ऑफ डिजायर विच इज लाइक एन इनसेशिएबल फायर। दे वाइज अलोन नो दैट टू बी इटर्नल एनिमी। अदर फुलिश पीपल लाइक अस कंसिडर इट टू बी फ्रेंड and then when the adverse reaction comes, then only at that time we consider it to be our enemy. Till then we are happy thinking of it as friend. Like the desire to say smoke tobacco, considered fine, you know, nice thing. But it is considered enemy only when we get some lung problems or cancer or some then it is looked upon as enemy. Till then it is considered to be very nice. But the wise person is characterized by looking at the effects and then controlling the action by looking at the effects. The ordinary unwise person acts with just instinct, impetuously acts without considering the results. I want to do that. This is just instinctive, unstoppable, impulse comes. That is how when it becomes very much concretized in one's psyche, then it is called compulsive behavior disorder. That there is, you have to behave like that, no thought, nothing, it just has to be done like that. It is a compulsive behavior disorder. A wise person doesn't act like that, looks at the result. What is going to happen if I do like that? And then looking at the results, that person decides whether I should go for it or should not go for it. It is the sign of wisdom. So here, this wise person looks at the desires and knows that they are going to bring suffering and bondage in my life. Do I want suffering and bondage? Does anybody want suffering and bondage? Do you want Triveni? Sure. You don't want, nobody wants bondage and suffering. Then why do we get bondage and suffering when we don't want? Why do we get it? In fact, we express order for that, you know. That why do we do that? Because we do not see, and we order for desire, and we do not see, think about it, what is going to come, and foolishly we place orders. There was an ad in some area where mosquitoes were a big problem. So a person read an ad in newspaper that mosquito killing machine guaranteed, only $20. And he said, oh wow, $20 is not much, I am getting this problem of continuously biting these mosquitoes. He ordered that without thinking, you know, that what that machine would be, what I ordered, placed the order, mosquito killing machine. And there were two stones in the package that he got. That one rather flat stone, another round stone. And there were the operating instructions were there. Catch the mosquito, put it on the flat stone, hold it and hit it with the round stone. If the mosquito doesn't die, money will be returned. So now, this kind of things we accumulate. Read some ads and then get, oh, would be very nice something, get it in our life. Desires are like that. We collect all such bondages, pile them up, and therefore the one who is wise looks into those today. What is that I am going to get? If I order this, what am I going to get? Look at that and then decide whether you want to ask for it or not. And most of our desires then will not be worked on at all, because we will see the result that will be coming in our life. So this is the sign of wise person. Look at the desire, look at the results, and then do the things. Very easily this can be understood to be the sign of a wise person. Think of the result. What am I going to get out of this? And then enter into it. Lord says that is why the wise people consider always this desire to be the enemy. The foolish people usually in the beginning consider it to be friend. Later on, when they get the result of it, they feel, oh, what a terrible thing I have done. So it is like that. It is many things that, wow, what a great joy it will be if I get married and all that. So they go for it. Later on, there was this shortage of priests and all that, So one marriage ceremony was going to be done. So the priest, proper priest was not there. So somebody said, okay, you go and do it, doesn't matter. But I don't know what priest to say. The scriptures say anything, who knows what you recite, and just do and come, it is. And this fellow opened that book, and then whatever was there, he started reading at the marriage. What was that prayer was, Lord, they do not know what they are doing, forgive them. So, forgive them what they do not know what they are doing. So, it's a funny thing, but the idea is that do we go there, do we do things with proper thought? Just rush, and thus the end result is bondage, different types of sufferings come our way, and then after that we think that this was not the right decision that I took. So it is this is the desire, therefore, is like that. Know that to be your enemy. Now comes the very important question. That now how to fight with it? And this is a very important question, that it is all I understand, that desire is my enemy. But they come, how am I to stop that? And talking is very easy, Swami, that it is, I can also give a lecture like you or even like Lord Krishna. But how is there a practical way of countering these desires? Well, one has to have a practical strategy for that. It is, when you are fighting with desires, then you cannot fight with desires if you have, weaker weapons than the desire has. You can conquer the enemy if you have more strength than the enemy. If you are weaker, then how are you going to conquer? So, therefore, you have to see if you have to conquer some enemy in the war. You have to find out what are the strong positions, what are the impregnable citadels of that enemy, and see how you can get there and how you can defeat that enemy there. Just doing something is not going to work. Spiritual practice is not doing whimsically something, you know. There has to be some proper understanding. It is not that, I have read in a book that if you do your nose one time like this and another time like this, then the illumination will come. What is the connection? You must understand, you know, that how is the illumination going to come by such things. Doing something whimsically is not what is advocated by Vedanta. Understand that what is the problem, then tackle it. It is known that how to conquer these desires. And they keep on coming at you, we understand. First of all, know it to be enemy. Don't look upon it as friend. Now comes, okay, I now understand that it is enemy. Half the battle is won already, friends. But only half the battle won doesn't mean much. You know, you have to win the full battle. It is have to cross swimming a river, and you crossed to half and lost all strength by that time, then the result is same, you see. Even if you had, instead of dying right at the beginning in the bank, you went a little ahead and then died there. So just winning the battle halfway is not enough. One has to win the battle fully. So now, where does this desire live? Find out. Where does it live? What are its impregnable forts? That is now discussed in this next verse, the 40th verse. Indriyani mano buddhi asyadhishthanam uchyate etair vimohayatyesha jnanamavritya dehinam. The senses, the mind and the intellect are said to be its seat. Covering knowledge by these, it deludes the embodied being. It has captured your senses, your mind and your intellect. All these are captured by your desires. See how our senses work. If we observe, we will see. They just work to satisfy our desires. Our intellect also works to satisfy our desires. All big, big scientists, where their intellect works, how to make more money, how to satisfy more these things, desires, how to bring the many new these things, gadgets and new things in the market. All that, why? The intellect has become slave to these desires. The intellect that should be busying, how should I become liberated? Like Buddha's intellect, just concentrated on this single issue, that the suffering is here in the world, how to get over the suffering. Yeah, that is practical. Buddha was asked some philosophical questions, that unnecessary debates, whether there are one soul or many souls, or when somebody is born 10 times or 20 times, and such things. He kept quiet. And the student again said, oh, you are not answering my questions. I came to you as your student, you are not asking my questions. He said, hey, did I promise you that I will give answers to all these questions? No. And then he gave that wonderful analogy, that suppose a man is struck with an arrow, bleeding, wounded. Now, do you first get yourself busy with these, that in which direction the arrow came from, what was the age of the fellow who shot the arrow, what was his father's name and grandfather's name, what is that you need to do at that time? Well, yes, take out the arrow, try to heal that person, that is what is to be done. So exactly. Yes. What is our problem? That we have suffering in this world. Do we want suffering? No. Then work to get rid of it. So that is the right way of using one's intellect. But no, we accept this main important thing, we let it wander all over in all different directions. Accumulate lot of ignorance, calling it knowledge, you know. Build big ignorance, you see. That gets the name knowledge, that's all. But it is ignorance. So, know that our intellect also has become slave to this desire. It is no more our intellect, it is that desire's intellect. And therefore, if scriptures tell to give up the desires, Emily starts thinking, why should I give desire? The intelligent girl, so she puts all her intelligence now, that intelligence has become slave of desire, so it will find out how to support the desire, you see. That we all do that, you know. It is not that she alone does it. It is all of us do like that. Try to show how the desire is good. So, whose slave has that intellect become now? It is working for that desire. It is now the servant of that desire. So all this, our sense organs, they work for the desires. Our mind works for the desire. Our intellect works for the desire. So let us beware of this fact, that let us not just go by these things, because they are already under the captivity of desire. So what should we take our stand on then? These have covered our knowledge. So Lord tells that first step therefore you have to take is to disown them. If you have called to support you, you have called some witnesses. These are my witnesses to support my argument. And they started telling something against you. The first thing you are supposed to do is declare them as hostile. You immediately declare that they are hostile witnesses. Although I called them as my witnesses, they have become hostile. So immediately first declare these our sense organs and mind and intellect as hostile. Control them. Tasmatvam indriyanyadav niyamya bharatarshabha papmanam prajahiyenam jnana vijnana nashanam. 41st verse. Therefore, controlling the senses at the very outset, O best of the Bharatas, that is Arjuna's name, kill this sinful thing which destroys realization and knowledge. When you disown them, that no, they are not my friends, and they have become hostile to me, they are working against me, that will make them lose all the power. They will become powerless. They work with your power. You supply them power. And taking your power, they work against you. They take salary from you and work for your enemy. That is how the spies are, you know. Spies, they get into your system. They become your employees. They get into your military, and they get paid by us, and then they are working against us. So these sense organs and all, we pay them, and they work against our interest. So don't pay them. Simply disown them that they are not ours. Then they will lose their support. Once they are identified, the spies, they lose their strength as soon as they get identified. They work only because they are not identified as spies. As soon as they get identified, then their strength is all gone. So, then, when you know this, that they controlling these senses at the very outset, don't just give them freedom to do whatever they want. They are spies. They are enemies. Control them. That is, and you can control them. It is because they work under you. It is only because of, you know, when one gets accustomed too much to the servant. You are paying the servant, but you become so dependent on it, you forget that it is you who had appointed him. It is you who are paying him. So you become so dependent on the servant, then you become scared of the servant. What if he leaves? What if he does some mischief? So you just bow down to the demands of the senses, thinking that, well, anything I do to control them will make the situation worse. And we get thus, you see, blackmailed by our own senses. Hey, do what I tell you to do. I want this pleasure. Come on. You fear, you shiver with fear. What if the senses do something wrong, rebel, and you succumb to their pressure. And that is the cause of one's downfall. So therefore, know that you are the master. Assert that mastership. Yes, I am the master. You know, I can survive very well without them. I have appointed them for my benefit. If they are not bringing benefit, why should I keep them? And certainly not if they are causing havoc. So, one should be very particular about it. This is a difficult task, difficult because we are not trained to do that. Our habits have made us feel that we are all dependent on these. It appears that controlling these things is impossible for us. It is the habit of age-old slavery that is the cause of this. But we can work on that. It is, we can begin. That is why we have come to Lord. It is, why do we take advice from somebody like Lord Krishna or such great teachers of mankind, Buddha and Jesus and so forth? It is because, well, they have shown these things in their life, that yes, it can be done. Then, what we say to ourselves, oh, they were great people, you know, and we are ordinary people. I had been telling in my monastic, early years of my monastic life, I was talking to one Swami. He asked, okay, are you doing those things, okay? I said, oh, well, how can I do that, you know, they were all great people. He said, look, Sri Ramakrishna told like this. said, well, your Sri Ramakrishna was a great incarnation of God. How can I compare myself with... Then he said, then why did you come here to learn from him? Do you think if you cannot change yourself in that, and if you think that it is absolutely impossible, if you want to continue with your bad behavior, you go and become disciple of some thief or cheat or robber, if you think that that is what you must do, why did you come to learn from Sri Ramakrishna? Sri Ramakrishna are such great teachers. They are here to teach us what they have been practicing, and we can learn all those things. It is not impossible. We have to build that self-confidence in us. Yes, I can do it. Vedanta says that if one man can do it, all of us can do it. That self-confidence is to be built up in us. It is a great technique that a positive self-image has to be built up. We have built up a negative self-image. I am weak, I can't do it. See, I am sinners, even the scriptures tell that you are sinner and so forth. How can I do that? No! And don't tell that lie to yourself. Tell that, yes, I am divine. I am the divinity. God is in me. What is impossible for me? I can do it. Let us take that stand based on the reality rather than based on illusion. When we take up that stand, then these things become possible in our life. Then it says in the next verse, you will be able to kill that enemy of desire which destroys your knowledge. How? Know what is stronger than what. You have to take your stand on something that is stronger than sense organs and mind and intellect, because these are the places captured by the desire already. So you have to take your stand on something stronger, then only you will be able to win the battle. If somebody has a gun and you are trying to fight with that fellow with some those silly arrows and bow and like that, you are not likely to. That fellow has far superior weaponry than you have. It is always this, that how these people won the battles in the early this period of Second World War. Why Germany went on conquering country after country in a very swift way, all very superior military power, at tremendously improved these weapons. These weaponries, they were very new for other people then. The techniques of warfare were completely, they were all taken aback. Now, if you want to conquer, well, you have to have then a superior weaponry. So then immediately the factories in other countries started that yes, we have to have superior submarines, we have to have superior air force, then only we have chance to win the battle. Yes, here also we have to think, that what is the superior machinery that we have to build. Next verse. We will not go through the whole meaning of that, but just read the verse and the meaning. Indriyani paranyaho indriyebhya param manah manasastu para buddhi yo buddhe paratastu sah. The senses are said to be superior to their objects. Superior to the senses is the mind. But superior to the mind is the intellect, while that which is superior to the intellect is the self. So, you have to take stand on the true nature, your true nature, the self, that is superior to all that. Then only there is the possibility of conquering this enemy. There is no other way of doing it. It is very important that we take stand on our divine nature and remember that we are divine. Then only we will be able to win this battle. So we shall discuss that more by the grace of God, and next Friday we will conclude this class. If you have any questions, we can discuss them. Yes, first Charles.
I know the ideal of Vedanta is that equanimity in pleasure and pain and praise and blame, but there's also this argument in a book called Pedagogy of the Oppressed that you have to be conscious that you're being oppressed in order to be free, and I don't know how to reconcile those two. Because if you just allow yourself to blame yourself and be oppressed, then you're never going to fight to be free.
Well, if you have the feeling, I understand your question. I haven't read the book that you mention about, but the if you feel oppressed, it is initially good that yes, then you will. When you feel oppressed, you don't like oppression. You don't like to be oppressed, so you try to get rid of it, and thus you get liberated. But that doesn't mean, you know, that you should continuously keep on feeling yourself as oppressed. That is not the idea at all. Get liberated and then don't feel oppressed. That is also the great idea, you know, in Judaism, that you are told to consider yourself in exile till you get to your that oneness. The land of oneness. That is the promised land, not some peace on the earth, but that is the promised land, that sphere of oneness. So, that is, till you don't get it, know that you are in exile, means you want to get back to that.
Yeah, but this would sometimes indicate that desire would seem to be necessary for finding a level of political freedom. Because in India, for example, they say that the states run by the communists, the people are better off.
Well, that is not in all states it's like that. And in one state, that is Kerala, there is a communist rule and the people are better off, but the reason for being better off is not the communist rule. And they are incidentally together. It is not that, just as in many cases, the democracy is not necessarily the cause of the economic downfall or bad condition of the people. It is many other factors have contributed to it. It is just as it is that argument, you know, the rooster gives the crows and then the sun rises, but that rooster is not the cause of the sunrise. So sometimes these things come together. It is that desire for political freedom is okay, it brings you political freedom.
Sometimes,
yeah. But if you get political freedom through that desire, and then have the desire for real freedom, that will bring you real freedom. Have the desire to get yourself free from all desires, and that will make you free from all desires, bringing you total fulfillment.
Yeah, it's just hard to check. I mean, I have this in my background, this whole political thing.
Well, that is okay, but one has to rise above that too, you know, right. Yes, Richard?
Well, if you're talking about working with the right attitude and having no desires, you're not talking about samadhi, you're talking about something different than samadhi. I've always associated God realization with this extraordinary state.
Yes, working with right attitude leads you to samadhi. Yeah, that is, we have a kind of fascination everywhere, not only in United States, that samadhi comes by just sitting like that, go to some meditation place, and then have some light or something in front, and concentrate on that, and sit like that, so do that for 15 minutes, and you will get into samadhi. Nobody can get samadhi like that. One has to transform the whole life, make it free from all desires. Then the restlessness in the mind will completely vanish. Then you get that state of samadhi. So working in a detached manner and with the spirit of equanimity paves way for becoming free from this restlessness. Then you become capable of properly meditating. Then comes the stage of samadhi. So this is attaining the basic this qualification for samadhi. You know, this is I am talking about. It's like passing the clearing the high school examination. First you have to get into kindergarten, is it not? No, I am not, when you are talking about kindergarten, you are not talking about graduation from the high school. Oh yes, but first you ought to get into kindergarten for that. So this work is considered the kindergarten discipline. We are not even doing that, what to speak of samadhi, you see. Yeah, you cannot even, you see, write ABCD and then want to, you know, graduate from high school. I had that in my childhood, that I was in second grade or third grade and the study appeared to be so difficult and all that. And I saw some high school graduate students that they were, I thought they don't have all these studies to do. So I thought I don't want to get into this third grade and fourth grade. Straight away I want to become high school graduate. So just as that is foolish, you see. So this idea of getting into samadhi without going through these basic disciplines is a far, far cry. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarai Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinisrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantra Tasya Namani Yani Karma Pyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Sri Krishna Arpanamastu.